unemployment numbers coming out this morning.
But in the meantime, I want to introduce you to this guy.
Looks like 95,000, maybe 100,000 new jobs. Sounds like a lot. It's not.
Superman, the unbelievable, brilliant. I mean, how many more adjectives are we going to be able to come up with?
Stuck twits, right?
Stuck twits.
Stuck twits.
If you do get 100,000 new jobs, it is not good news. It is bad news for the economy.
I don't want to be a twit.
You don't want to be a twit.
Some things are hard to avoid, Joe.
And now, the jobs report.
163,000 jobs here.
Better net job creation than we thought.
You wouldn't break out the party hats,
but a good number, better than expected.
Pretty solid, encouraging number.
It's a good number.
Very strong, and here's, guys, perhaps the best news. Manufacturing jumped 25,000.
Temp services up 14, that's not bad. Government was down again, -9, so that did not help.
So this, I think, is a good sign.
I'm sure the White House is breathing a sigh of relief this morning.
We were not expecting, I don't think any analyst was looking for 163,000.
Listen, we live in a bizarro world right now.
That's not good news.
That's not good news.
Coming off this horrendous 2008-2009 job drought.
Are you blaming Bush?
Never, never.
It's like co-anchoring for dummies right here.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah. That's still extremely weak compared to Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Save me, I'm a bear. I'm not good in the water.
The more you talk, Brian, the more I give up hope.
I hope my parents are not watching, and if they are, I'm sorry, Dad. I love you. We dressed into the night. He picked me up. We made me feel so lucky. Seven, he kissed me in his lips. We be making love it. Still the one I do this for. I'm trying to make us free from that. Two, still the one.
Injection, fellas.
I would like now to present my most fantastic creature, a superior being, a vision of Afrikaic beauty, a black goddess come to earth.
Candidly, I handle bars without the back pedal. They be pebbles, I'm a hard rock like heavy metal. In a stiletto, echo one love to every ghetto. I'm Patrice Jackson Nice, you can call me cello. From the hello, I bellowed in a falsetto. A verbal pyromaniac, so let the flame settle. A one-woman symphony that I conduct like metal. Divinity is in the bloodstream mixed with rebel. Cause randomly I'm ripping tracks into hemispheres. I ring them out and leave them hanging out like chandeliers. It's no fear, I'm eating green so no one can stop me. A kamikaze, son, I'm moving like an Anunnaki. They try to block me, I read you white, I'm leave them sloppy. Speaking unfamiliar tongues so no one can copy. Illuminati want your mind, soul, and your body. But I'm a prodigy with riders on the side of me, so you can feel it vibrating from the baseline. We got the rhythm resonating through your waistline. We get it done cause we the one and we don't waste time. So throw your hands up in the sky, man, cause you already know. You can feel it vibrating from the baseline. We got that rhythm resonating through your waistline. We get it done cause we the one and we don't waste time. So throw your hands up in the sky, man, cause you already know. If I came in the door, I said it before. You don't touch nothing, maybe we won't have to rush nothing. I bang with this in seven languages. Your man is just caught up in the cinema mirror while talking to her. I ain't even lyrically bust, you proven enough. You should call a friend if you must. Trust us, we can conjure up stardust on command. Braise sand while you singing to it.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
I wonder if I'm scared of you. Are most men scared of you? I'm not sure whether I should be frightened of you or not.
No, nobody's scared of me.
I don't know. I bet a lot of guys are scared of you, though, because you're such an institution now. Really, you are. You're a kind of a national possession. Do you feel that you belong to the nation as a whole?
I don't know quite what you mean by that.
I
live here.
That'll do it very nicely. I hear that you're moving to New York City to live. Is it so?
Yes. This will be my home from now on. Mm-hmm. That is until I retire. And when I retire, I'm going to retire to Brooklyn.
Really? Why Brooklyn?
Oh, that's my favorite place in the world so far that I've seen.
Sure enough.
I haven't traveled much, but I don't think I'll find anything to replace Brooklyn. I like the streets. I guess the people and the streets and the atmosphere. I just like it.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think you'll be at the top, I wonder?
At the top isn't so important. What I'd like to do, that is what I would like to accomplish, I would like to be a good actress. Mm-hmm. And it's not a matter of being on top, because I think some of the best actors and actresses perhaps aren't on the top. So that's not the thing.
Do you miss your anonymity? Do you miss being able to go out and not be recognized and go places so that, as it used to be before you became famous, so no one would pay any attention to you except...
I'll tell you. I do in a way. However, I'm terribly grateful for everything that's happened, because I remember when things weren't like this at all. Yeah. But you do miss sometimes just being able to be completely yourself and someplace, and people just know you as another human being.
Well, now, your success has been the, or close to it, the dream of every American girl, all right, I guess. After you got what you want, did you want it?
Well, the thing I like the most is to become a real actress. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a kid, sitting in the front row at the movies on Saturday afternoon, and I would never come out of the movie, they'd have to come and get me, you know, I'd sit in the front row, and I'd think how wonderful it would be to be an actress and so forth. But I didn't really realize about acting, except I appreciated what I saw, bad, good, it didn't matter. I enjoyed it very much, everything that I would see, anything that would move on the screen. However, I think I realize more and more the responsibility. And it is a responsibility, and mm-hmm. as I say, I would like to be a good actress.
Mm-hmm. Good night, Marilyn.
Bye-bye.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Another panic in a movie theater. This one happened in South Beach in Miami. More than 100 people bolted out of a late night screening of The Dark Knight Rises after they said they saw a man wearing black gloves screaming, "This is it," from the back of a crowded theater.
Look at his mugshot.
That is just...
my goodness.
Some moviegoers tackled and heckled 44-year-old David Escamillo. They tackled him down until police arrived. Escamillo was charged with disorderly conduct. Police say there was no evidence of any gunshots. No one was hurt during this mad but obviously very scary rush.
Wow.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
California professor is behind bars this hour, accused of plotting a lethal attack at a high school. Here's CNN's Casey Wyan.
UC Irvine professor Rainer Reinscheid is jailed without bail after police allegedly caught him last week crouched down in bushes at this park with lighter fluid and a pile of paper. He quickly made bail but was rearrested after a police investigation, officers say, tied him to 5 arson fires and 1 attempted arson last month in neighborhoods near University High, where his son went to school.
All the fires happened at something connected to his son, whether it was his high school where he attended, the home of the administrator who was responsible for disciplining the child, or the park itself.
Authorities say the professor's arson spree was precipitated by the suicide death of his 14-year-old son in March. The boy hung himself from a tree in this park located just outside his high school campus. Officials say the boy killed himself after being forced to pick up trash on campus, punishment for theft.
The student was engaged in stealing something from the local student store, but it was a minor event. It didn't lead to a suspension even.
According to prosecutors, Reinscheid blamed school officials for his son's suicide. They say the 48-year-old professor, who lives in this neighborhood near campus, plotted a massacre at the high school, then his own suicide.
He was clearly starting fires and working on burning the school down. In his emails, to his wife, he indicated that he wanted to acquire some firearms and go to the school and just do a great deal of violence at the school, including sexual assaults and then random violence against the kids. So I think it was serious.
I couldn't be more shocked. He's an excellent scientist, very hardworking.
His work was groundbreaking, including the discovery of a memory-boosting protein considered a potential Alzheimer's treatment. Chillingly, Reinscheid wrote in 2010, the find, quote, may help us better understand post-traumatic stress disorder, which involves exaggerated memories of traumatic events. It's hard to imagine an event more traumatic than the suicide of a child. Our calls to Reinscheid's attorney were not returned. The professor is convicted of arson and mayhem.
One, two, three, four.
I know you sat alone so many nights waiting for me. Cold your face like a stone. I hang up the phone when we disagree. Standing there by my side when the fighting is done. Glaring at me in the light. Is my little toy gun.
Sources say that the man accused of shooting former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and 18 others wants to plead guilty. Jared Lee Loeffner will have a chance to enter that plea in court on Tuesday. NBC News correspondent Diana Alvear was in Tucson the day of the shooting reporting on it. Diana joins us now on the phone. Diana, with a good morning to you. Let's get right to what's going to happen on Tuesday when Loeffner's in court. What do you know about that?
Alex, good morning. The federal judge handling the case had scheduled a status hearing for this coming Tuesday to get an update from prison doctors that are treating Jared Loeffner. He's been undergoing treatment in a Bureau of Prisons hospital since shortly after that shooting. Well, Loeffner now wants to plead guilty at that hearing.
This is the Monster's Lair, your first look at the apartment of the suspect in the Batman movie Massacre. Meanwhile, he reportedly has become so difficult to deal with that jail guards are forcing him to wear a creepy contraption.
James Holmes has been spitting at prison guards so much, he's being forced to wear a special protective mask like this.
The mask is simple and lightweight, but it forms an effective barrier preventing inmates from spitting on guards. It goes over their head like so and blindfolds the inmate and also disorients them. It's tied firmly on the back of their neck, and because the inmate's hands are handcuffed behind him, he can't take it off.
Here it is in action, used by police subduing a prisoner in court during an insanity hearing. It's a grim reminder of the mask worn by Hannibal Lecter in The Silence of the Lambs. And it's earned the 24-year-old accused killer the nickname Hannibal Holmes.
He reportedly keeps asking what's going on and claims to be suffering from amnesia with no memory whatsoever of the shooting.
For the day when I can save face and come to a happy home. I know it's turning me to the kind of girl who'd rather be alone. Just wait till I get my way. I promise you it won't be fun. If you feel like you should pray, pray for my little toy gun.
My name is Brad Wentland. I'm the police chief for the city of Greenfield. It's W-E-N-T-L-A-N-D-T. I will be the public information officer for this incident for the foreseeable next couple of hours probably. I have limited information to give you. I hope you understand this is an ongoing and very fluid situation. There's information I cannot give you. I will tell you this, that we would plead with the media on scene to not broadcast any photos, video of tactical units, officer movement, and particularly new aerial footage of the event as it's ongoing. That could be very dangerous to our personnel as they go about executing their duties. What I can tell you is that approximately 10:25 a.m., Oak Creek Dispatch received an unintelligible 911 call from someone who was reporting an incident. They received further information that there may be a shooting going on at the Sikh temple here in Oak Creek. An officer arrived on scene. He engaged an active shooter. That officer was shot multiple times.
A 65-year-old woman who owns this jewelry store isn't talking, doesn't want her face on camera. She's worried that the gunman who tried to rob her might come back. But there is little doubt that lots of people are cheering for the lady who gave the bad guys some of their own medicine.
It looked like a well-planned heist. The getaway van backs up to the store's front door, the driver waiting behind the wheel. Five men with guns come in, carrying pillowcases for loot, pointing their pistols at the store's clerks and a customer, until the store's owner fires two shots with her own gun.
The store owner fires two rounds.
There is absolute panic as the gunmen fight each other to run out of the door, with the 65-year-old proprietor in hot pursuit, gun in hand, police saying she acted in self-defense. The van drives off so quickly that three suspects are left behind. A block away, they're picked up by the getaway van, and they all get away. But were any of them involved in another jewelry store heist the next day, here at the Asian Garden Mall in nearby Westminster, where another jewelry store owner shot one suspect in the face?
MC, so you ain't seeing me third eye lyrically, like empirically, I'm numerically mature, a brown skin more that's melanated to the core, and I ain't come alone or with a pack of herbivores, we're nappy and we ready, keep that pineal steady, like Masada Serengeti, son, we can get it on, and I ain't even done, son, I'm just getting on, but I've been living math since the day that I was born, an elevated height like I get the right light, 1100 Fahrenheit and you ain't even warm, this is my dawn, done and you've been forewarned. Cause I'ma keep it ripping till the track's been torn. Like a chick's been scorned, man, I move like a pawn. Get to your end of the board and guaranteed to switch form.
Something is happening in Anaheim, California, despite a complete blackout from the corporate mainstream media. Take a look at some of these pictures by award-winning investigative journalist Amber Lyons from Anaheim over this last weekend. When we hear terms like militarized police, this is kind of what comes to mind. Officers decked out in full military gear as though they're about to be deployed to Afghanistan. So what's behind this? Why are militarized police on patrol in Anaheim? Sunday marked the ninth straight day the local citizens took to the streets to protest police brutality. It's been 9 days since police shot an unarmed man, 25-year-old Manuel Diaz, in the back of the head, killing him. And since that shooting, the streets of Anaheim have been the scene of mostly peaceful protests that have at times turned violent in response to heavy-handed police crackdowns. Last week, this, for example, was the scene in Anaheim, as police in riot gear fired projectiles like beanbags and pepper balls indiscriminately into crowds of people. 24 people were arrested that night. Storefront windows were smashed and fires were started. And last night, as hundreds poured into the streets for a peaceful march and ceremony for Manuel Diaz, they were once again met with the Anaheim police, equipped with full military gear.
It's a small world after all. It's a small world after all.
which is the chicken and which is the egg here? A lousy metaphor, I suppose, but is the excessive police presence producing a reaction from the people, or is it the reaction of the people to the initial police presence and an escalating reaction causing a greater police presence?
Well, I would say that the police presence, just from what we noticed, because we had two protests we attended yesterday back to back. One was where the protesters were trying to march to Disneyland. And on the way there, they were met with officers on horseback who had sticks in their hands. They were also met with officers in full military camo SWAT gear riding on the backs of trucks, about a dozen per truck, heading to block the road leading to Disneyland. So that definitely heightened tensions. Just seeing that many officers and those weapons as well. So we left that protest that got quite a bit tense. And then we went to the candlelight vigil later that night, and that's when the citizens were allowed to police their own protest. And that was just a calm, happy, tranquil feeling. So it was almost like black and white between when there was a police presence and when there wasn't.
It's a world out there.
In the U.S. state of Vermont are counting the costs of a protest by a disgruntled farmer who decided to use his tractor to crush all the patrol cars he could find. Roger Pion allegedly caused $250,000 worth of damage. Police were able to use their remaining vehicles to chase him down, and now he will face several charges, one including unlawful mischief.
Oh my God, he's so high. We have been arguing on the Young Turks to decriminalize not just marijuana. I personally have been saying decriminalize all the drugs. Now, everybody here at the staff has different opinions. Everybody agrees overall that we should decriminalize marijuana, but different opinions on drugs. I said do them all because I as long as you make them illegal, there's going to be a black market. There's going to be gangs for it. It doesn't help, right? Now, it turns out, of course, that one country at least tried this. And back in 2001, Portugal decriminalized all drugs. Now, we've talked to you about the Portuguese experiment before and that it seemed that it was going well with the numbers. Well, a new report is out after 11 years of this experiment. How has it gone so far? Well, the numbers are in and they are astounding. Now, we were told by all the fearmongers, my God, if you decriminalize it, then the drug use is going to run rampant. Well, what about all these poor kids who suffer from drug abuse and their families, et cetera, et cetera? You're condemning them to a worse fate, et cetera. And we said, hey, listen, if you decriminalize, it doesn't necessarily mean that the numbers are going to get worse. They might even get better. I think they would. So what happened in Portugal? They got better. But they didn't just get a little better. They got much better. So first of all, in the previous 10 years, the number of drug addicts being treated has dropped by half in Portugal. They cut the rate by 50%. What happened? I thought it was supposed to go up. No, there's far less drug addicts. And if you think that's an impressive number, drug-related diseases, including STDs and overdoses, have been reduced by an even greater number. So we knew that those numbers might be better if the government didn't criminalize it and treat it as some sort of thing that you should be locked up for usage, right? But it turns out even the addiction rates have gone down dramatically, and now the drug usage rate in Portugal is among the lowest in the EU. It was a stunning success. Now the question for the rest of the world, and particularly for the United States of America, is are we going to learn from facts? These people tried it, it worked, decriminalization works, you get less drug addicts, not more. Or are we going to be, as usual, stubborn and say, no, America number one, whatever we do by definition must be the greatest. Oh, Europe, we're not going to listen to Europe. All right, well, if we're going to actively choose to be stupid, then we get everything we deserve. But I think we should actually listen to facts and adjust our strategy. The war on drugs is a horrible, abysmal failure. It's time to end it. It's time to decriminalize these drugs so that we have less gang warfare, less killing, less people locked up for no reason, and actually less drug addicts.
Anyway, Mitt Romney's foreign trip could have major influence in what is being called the swing state of Israel. Romney's meeting with Israeli leaders today, but the visit is also an opportunity for Mr. Romney to make inroads with Jewish voters, a demographic that traditionally leans to the left, and it did go solidly to President Obama in 2008. Let's bring in Eli Lake. He is the senior national security correspondent for Newsweek and the Daily Beast, and he recently wrote an article titled, "Is Israel Mitt Romney's New Swing State?" Eli, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So in your article, you say that Governor Romney's trip to Jerusalem, that it actually, you know, could be a turning point for the GOP. Why is that? And why do you call Israel the swing state?
Where we continue to follow these two titans of politics, battling it out on the campaign trail, no holds barred, as we have been for 4 hours a day for the past year and a half. Wow, just look at these two, shaking hands, talking, shaking some more hands. Jason Copeland, this election has been a real roller coaster ride, am I right?
Yes, Andrea, a slow-moving roller coaster indeed, one with a few slight dips and turns in the beginning, perhaps,
yes.
And then just a thrilling, action-packed, slow-paced ride to the finish in
and
November.
And speaking of the finish, I think it's time to check in with our interactive 2012 election timeline.
Great idea, Andrea. Take a look at this. It's an absolutely exhilarating time right now, because as you can see, the conventions are just under 2 full months away.
Oh, that's right, Jason, and we will have a lot of coverage of those when they happen.
Yes, we will, and then, of course, on November 6th, that's Election Day.
That's right.
Also, a ways away.
Absolutely, and the Onion News Network will be there. Our Election 2012 copter is outside in the air right now. It's just circling our studio waiting for something to happen. It's been circling for a few days now. Okay, why don't we check in with the polls?
Yeah, we can do that. Take a look at this. Surprisingly, very, very close to where they were just 10 minutes ago, Andrea.
But still riveting.
Yes, positively voltaic.
Okay, voltaic. Now, I don't know what that means. Why don't we talk about that word?
Oh, great idea, Andrea. Well, yes. I believe, and I hope I'm not wrong, that it means electric. Specifically, an electric current generated by a chemical reaction.
Wow. Chemical reaction, you say? Exciting.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so, Jason, what about the allegations of Ann Romney's lesbian past?
Oh, I actually hadn't heard that.
Let's just roll with it.
Oh, all right. Great. No proof right now to the recent claims that Ann Romney had a lesbian affair during her late 20s, but the Onion News Network will, of course, continue to investigate and bring you up-to-the-minute updates on this controversial story.
It's time to go to a commercial. Great. Let's do that. And when we come back, we'll discuss the new findings collected from the latest census revealing that this year the average American voter is a 36-year-old Hispanic man obsessed with trivia and filled with deep shame.
No! Stop it already!
Now to that major security breach forcing the government to shut down one of its most sensitive nuclear weapon sites tonight. Take a look at this picture. Authorities say she is the reason why. An 82-year-old nun who they say cut through fences, got past high-tech security. Why? And what does this say about how secure our nuclear sites truly are? Here's ABC's David Curley now.
I am Megan from Nevada.
Sister Megan Rice and two others did what no one should be able to do. As part of an anti-nuclear protest, they brazenly broke into one of the country's highest security facilities, the site of protests in the past. The target, the country's largest stockpile of uranium for nuclear bombs, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. In the middle of the night, using bolt cutters, the three breached the perimeter fence, and then three more fences and motion detectors, reaching the building holding all that uranium, splashing blood on it and raising two banners before guards, who have the authority to shoot to kill, finally arrested the three.
You have to be a little concerned when it's, you know, an octogenarian nun who helps you understand your nuclear weaknesses and security.
I'm Kenny Kennedy. This is Tim Devanon, who I punched last week. Tim, I'm really sorry about that.
No problem, Kenny. It's all right. Didn't affect me at all.
God damn it, Tim. Now I'm sorry I didn't kill you so you wouldn't tell such lies. Get your death face on. This is Pick Your Poison. All right, Tim. Boil your organs with the beekeeper reaching the fencing finals or Coach K opting to stick a tiny coxswain named Brian up on top of the shot clock.
Glug, glug, coxswain. It's a good move. That 5-foot sprite's keeping all those egos in check and in sync with his harsh but calculated squawks.
I don't care if a small man rhythmically screaming, sound, convinces Mello to play defense. Brian's feet dangle in front of the shot clock, and he falls off with every dunk.
International rulebook lets Coach K have a court general 15 feet off the ground. Against Tunisia, Brian directs a couple beautiful fast breaks and kept Tyson Chandler motivated to jump the entire game.
The dream team never used a coxswain, Tim.
They had Isaiah Thomas up there, but everyone hated him too much to listen, just like you. Now pick your poison. Is it China's Olympic success raising suspicions they trained in a replica Great Britain, or all the water polo players drowning again?
Bottoms up, Beijing! The People's Republic is winning gold after gold, looking too comfortable in London. It's obvious that China's athletes trained in an illegal life-size United Kingdom to gain the equivalent of a home court advantage.
There's no evidence to sniff, K-Stink. So some Chinese gymnast gave an interview in Cockney rhyming slang. In a foreign country, you pick up the local accent.
Poppy! All the Chinese Olympianads are instinctively looking right for oncoming traffic and being racist towards the Irish. Clear case, they've had a fake UK up their sleeve.
The IOC tests obsessively for things like replica host cities. Kenny, come on! They sampled two Chinese provinces, saw no sign of double-decker buses or a Chinese lady died memorial, and moved on.
Move on from your life, Tim, and pick your poison. Will it be the British gymnast who won gold with a dry, sarcastic floor routine, or the New Zealand eight-man rowing team developing sailing technology to win in the finals?
I'm chugging the sailboat death brine. Those Kiwis broke out of the box using an oar and sewn together uniforms to harness the power of wind, cruise to an easy goal.
Rowers have bigger problems than chasing shiny trinkets. I'm more impressed with the Canadian team inventing the fishing net and bringing home some much-needed trout to their hut-thatching wives.
Well, you give a man a fish, he eats fish. Can you give a man a sail? He discovers new worlds and introduces them to his sexually transmitted diseases.
Ha! That sounds like the heaven you're about to see on your way to hell! This was Pick Your Poison. I hope you pick Fadley. I won't miss you.
Do you guys remember Snoop Dogg?
Snoopy, Snoopy, Poop Dogg.
Come on! Snoop! Snoop-a-loop! Yeah, I'm glad you do. At first, Snoop was like,
yo.
But now he's like,
I want to bury Snoop Dogg
and become Snoop Lion.
You see, at first he was like, yo. But now he's like,
I could never become Snoop Lion if I was never Snoop Dogg.
At first he was like,
yo.
But now he's like,
Snoop Lion is the elevation of Snoop Dogg.
And this is all because Snoop went to Jamaica, smoked a lot of weed, ate some weird potato chips, had a ceremony, and now he has become Snoop Lion. But the funniest part of this story is actually this lady.
Ginny Mo, CNN!
Maybe you've seen her before. She is good at putting a report together, but sometimes reports on stupid stuff. She's also super vanilla and likes to make an ass of herself in public.
Did you guys hear the news? Snoop Dogg's changed his name to Snoop Lion.
She seems to take some of this stuff really seriously. I mean, she says things like,
we haven't had to adjust to such a jarring name change since Puff Daddy switched to P. Diddy, then diddled with the P.
Why is she acting like it's such a big deal that the public would have to remember a new name for a celebrity?
Suddenly, we're faced with Lion?
Them a walk in a talk about this one. Them a laugh and go on about that one. Hey, what you want, you can't get it, get it. And the problem will get real dready, dready. Say, who feels it knows? And I suppose that you never know. Oh, you reap what you sow. Can't plant the corn when the peas won't fit grow. No. La 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 la.
Listen to this.
And there is this downside to the name change. Pity the poor fans stuck with merchandise like the Snoop Dogg floor mat or walking around in pajamas wearing Snoop Dogg slippers.
See them hypocrites, them come again. They must spread dirty lies, them I know me friend. Throw a stone in a de hot bin. And the one who squirrel on him will have a problem. Hey, who feels it knows? And I suppose them heart made out of stone. Oh, you reap what you sow. Bucket to go nowhere, bottom bound to drop out. Teen, who feels it knows? And I suppose that you never know. Oh, you reap what you sow. Can't plant the corn when the bees won't feed grow. No. La 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 la.
Name the Snoop Lion.
So I went to York around the watch today.
Oh?
Yeah. That dolls a rainbow on her face. Can't believe that Maury album, John. Did you stop by the Love Black call?
Yeah, I come by the mixing. I played that Pribadium by the wrong front line today.
Oh, the Raising Man with an Ash Marine. Doesn't mean you agreed that treason.
No, her station is trapped. I mean, why the crest soldier for the Magdalene nation is further grad to my Joseph.
Joseph is a Magalon?
Magalon my Van of porn just ran for mom's predation sex pic. You porn along for that?
Shit, I have a car. What way?
Thursday, you porn along for that?
Yeah, sure. So I can sew that long hat you want for the Rat Chat seasonal, and yeah, Chad's a long way from the rainbow seasonal and all that kind of art. So we wrap the bird again. We wrap the gate crap frown. You want that? Okay. Spline for me, display the Joe drink all around the mass predation town while I for mass the Pope for cream and what's for why I chose Farine and all? What's for why I bleed the whole chase between? You wanna get for what?
Alright!
Call in the skies today. A bird collided with a packed United Airlines jet, which was flying into Denver, and the bird punctured the front of the plane, creating a gaping hole near the nose. Fortunately, the flight landed safely. No one was injured, but as ABC's Clayton Sandell reports, bird strikes are a growing threat.
It could have been catastrophic, a feathery mid-air collision. This United 737 with 151 passengers on approach to Denver International Airport today when it collided with what appears to be a large bird. The impact tore a giant diamond-shaped hole in the nose, even ripping off flight sensors. There were no injuries, but the pilots declared an emergency. In April, another bird strike was captured on camera. A passenger on a flight from New York to Los Angeles saw a flock of birds fly right into an engine. And of course, who could forget when Canada geese brought down Sully Sullenberger's U.S. air flight into the Hudson River.
Lives of more than 600 million people were plunged into chaos in one of the widest electrical outages the world has ever seen. Nearly half of India became completely powerless on Tuesday when three massive grid collapses crippled the nation's infrastructure. Commuters in capital New Delhi became stranded when metro trains ground to a halt. Many were forced to sit on street corners using what phone battery they had left to call loved ones to pick them up. However, roads became gridlocked after traffic lights in affected cities also switched off. This was the second such power cut in as many days, leaving engineers battling to restore power before nightfall. While much of India is still in the dark over what caused the blackout, reports suggest it could be down to some states using more power than they were legally allowed.
Couple days, History Channel wants to know what the heck's going on with what we're doing here. They have that new series out called Ancient Aliens. Okay, we're the next one. They want to know about Native Americans, spirituality, and aliens. But I said, I don't want to talk to anybody that mentions the word alien. I don't have time for that. There's no such thing. It sets up a negative reaction in our system, saying that we're better, or there's, you know, it separates EBEs, extraterrestrial biological entities. Stop it. Because you're not going to experience too much if you continue using them terms. I've seen it happen in Florida when a ship came. Ship came and there was a lady from Puerto Rico. She only did it in her mind. She said, look at that UFO. And as soon as she said UFO, boom, gone. Okay? When somebody sees you and points you out, what would they like to call you? You know? What would they like to call you? What would you like to be called? Would you like to be dressed with love, with respect, with honor, with dignity? With light? If you don't address your star brothers and sisters that way, you're not going to get anything because you're setting yourself up for failure. Because vibration is just that, your frequency. You have to raise yours to their levels. So we need to redefine our vibrations.
So far, all systems are go for an historic late-night landing on Mars. NASA's Curiosity rover is set to touchdown on the red planet around 1:30 Monday morning Eastern Time. The landing of the $2.5 billion robot is being called one of the most high-stakes and complex projects of its kind. Let's bring in Tarek Malik. He's the managing editor of Space.com to help break down why this is such a big deal, other than it's just darn cool. Good morning, and I understand you haven't even been able to sleep because you're so excited about all this.
Yeah, this is an exciting day, not just for NASA, but for the United States space program. Basically, tonight, or actually on Monday morning at 1:31, NASA will get either a yes or a no from this robot, the biggest rover ever sent to Mars, the most capable, and if everything goes the way NASA hopes, it could find out if Mars could have ever supported life on its surface in the past or even now.
And so you take that information and the answers from those questions, and what do you do with that?
Well, NASA wants to know not only if life is present on Mars now or was in the past, but does that mean that Earth isn't as special You know, we have life everywhere on our planet, and if we find it on Mars or anywhere else in the solar system, it will help you know, them understand you know, what are the requirements for life? How does life evolve? You know, is there life somewhere else on another star?
You know, what's interesting, NASA's making this a big deal. In fact, they're calling it 7 minutes of terror. I want to just play a little bit of a video that NASA's released explaining all of this. Let's take a listen, everybody.
When we first get word that we've touched the top of the atmosphere, the vehicle has been alive or dead on the surface for at least 7 minutes.
Okay, so these 7 minutes, we're not going to know what happens. What is the percentage likelihood that it's going to go off okay? Because we all get so used to getting the information. We'll expect pictures at some point and more details. I mean, you just kind of think it's going to go okay.
Yeah, in fact, this seems to be the most audacious way to land on Mars that NASA has come up with. They're very confident. They haven't given actual percentage odds, but they're fairly confident that this is going to work. What they're going to do is go from 13,000 miles an hour to zero in 7 minutes using a rocket-powered sky crane that won't even touch down on Mars. It's going to come screeching out of the atmosphere, and then it's going to basically hover over a spot, an Gale crater. This is the spot right here on Mars.
Okay.
And it's going to lower this one-ton rover down on cables.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the wheels touch the ground, it'll send a signal to the sky crane. It detaches cables, flies off, crashes the rover, you know, switches on, turns on its cameras, 17 of them, and starts beaming back pictures to Earth.
And it will stay there forever. The Mars rover will not be something that a mission will be sent to go bring it back or anything, because you'll get the information.
Exactly. Yeah, there's going to be two spacecraft watching it. NASA has a bunch of antennas that are going to be listening on it. This thing is built to just rove for 2 years. It has a nuclear power source to keep it going, even in a Martian winter. They're in it for the long haul.
These are pictures of equations. I've been, for the last 15 years, trying to answer the kinds of questions that my colleagues here have been raising. And what I've come to understand is that there are these incredible pictures that contain all the information of a set of equations that are related to string theory. And it's even more bizarre than that, because when you then try to understand these pictures, you find out that buried in them are computer codes just like the type that you find in a browser when you go surf the web.
You're saying your attempt to understand the fundamental operations of nature leads you to a set of equations that are indistinguishable from the equations that drive search engines and browsers on our computers.
That is correct. So,
Wait. I have to just be silent for a minute here. So you're saying as you dig deeper, you find computer code writ in the fabric of the cosmos.
Into the equations that we want to use to describe the cosmos, yes.
Computer code.
Computer code, strings of bits of ones and zeros.
It's not just sort of resembles computer code, you're saying it is computer code.
It's not even just is computer code, it's a special kind of computer code that was invented by a scientist named Claude Shannon in the 1940s. That's what we find very, very deeply inside the equations that occur in string theory and in general in systems that we say are supersymmetric. Some of those codes are showing on the screen behind you right now. They don't look like codes, but these pictures, which we call adinkras, are graphical representations of sets of equations that are based on codes. That in the description of our universe, that is a supersymmetrical universe, which we were going to test in the LHC. If you believe that description, I can show you the presence of these codes. That's my statement.
Do you have any predictions in your ideas or any ways to test any of your ideas any more than, say, the guy over on the screen?
The work that I'm doing is, in fact, so theoretical that we don't understand yet whether it is even possible to complete the program. We have found these strange graphs. We know that they are equivalent to equations, and we have found in these equations computer codes, and so that's where we are right now. So I cannot give you a prediction. This work is less than 2 years old.
But it's not that you never you recognize that you will need a prediction in order to...
Someone recently asked me, said, well, you don't care about experiments, do you? And I said, no, that's exactly wrong, because you see, I have spent my career as a researcher worrying about supersymmetry. I would want to see an experiment before I shuffle off this mortal coil, so that I know that I did not waste my entire professional life.
This is towards Dr. Gates. I'm curious about your theory. You say there's computer code in these equations. Now, computer code is generally just instructions for a processor. And I'm curious as to what the instructions you're finding are. And if you're not sure, what's to say that it's actually computer code? I mean, theoretically, the number pi has all the data that's ever existed.
Well, we say that they're computer codes.
You mean the digits in pi?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We say they're computer codes, first of all, because the structure of the equation is such that they dictate that there are certain things that are actually strings of ones and zeros. That's just digital data. But it's not just random ones and zeros. As I mentioned earlier, let me talk about something that you probably do every day, but I don't know if you're a computer scientist or not. Most of us sit at our...
Sounds that kind of fluency, I say.
Okay, well, most of us sit at our computer screens and we type on the keyboards, and we then send these, if we're using a browser, we're sending strings of ones and zeros elsewhere. But on the other hand, in the transmission process, there's always some fluctuations. So a zero that you type here because of static in line might be read as a one at the other end, and vice versa. And so in fact, when you sit and type on the keyboard, your computer's doing something behind your back. Namely, it throws in a bunch of extra ones and zeros, which, and these things are called error correcting codes, so that the computer at the other end can look at the whole collection of what you typed plus what was sent and figure out if there were bits that were being flipped back and forth. And that's how you get accurate transmission of digital data. Among the codes that are used for this purpose are a special class of codes that are called block linear self-dual error correcting codes. They were first, in fact, the Shannon extended checksum code is an example of one of these things. These are the codes that we find buried in the equations. Not just any code, but these self-dual error correcting block codes. It's quite remarkable for anyone that I've talked to. We have no idea what these things are doing there.
Any literature out?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any literature out that...
I can give you technical references that almost nobody in the world can understand. So this past June, the British journal Physics World asked me to write a popular level description of what we have found. So in the June edition of Physics World, and it's published in London, the cover story is called Symbols of Power. It's about these weird symbols that have been showing behind us. We call these things adinkras. And so for a popular level description, yes, we've written that. But other than this one popular level description, it's all technical gobbledygook. Wonderful. And that's a technical term.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Occupy your life like an art bomb that spreads in the distance. These are the sounds of resistance. Holding hands, we witness the unraveling threads of the system. Synapse ecstatic, relapse begin. Start with our intuition and then move to our spiritual mission. People over profit. When we reach for it, we got it. People over banks, priests, police, and politicians. People are in the streets, not down for submission. These are the promises we keep to our children. And lighter and more warm-hearted, it's where this world stops and the new one gets started. As we become faithful to the faithful departed, or deported, or martyred. Combine, react, infusion of diverse, radical, tactical solutions. Imagine eternal bliss. In whatever this clever universe is, remember that we are all in this together. In the world we see, paint this picture clearly, clearing our canvas and coloring in harmony. We see worldwide bike lanes lined with flowers and edible fruit trees. Magic journeys filled with love, laughter, and cosmic mysteries. Picking flowers and climbing redwood trees, finding reishi mushrooms of immortality. Building double rainbow pyramid memories from now until the next millennium centuries. We learn to fly in love, soar up above. It's a new symbiotic love expressed in massaging hands. This is a multiverse that constantly expands, sprouting medicine while casting spells in the sand. Imagine a world without war, without poverty, and without money, filled with abundance, feeding the entire world with seeds of plenty, shedding the skin of our collectivized scarcity exponentially. Consequentially, there's this evolutionary empathy encompassing all all of us mentally. Eventually, we'll all be rich beyond measure. The love in our lives found is life's greatest pleasure. Occupy pockets of unlocked buried treasures. Like rainforests, we flourish. Replant, reforest. Detoxing the water clean, swimming in blue rivers and rapid streams. Join us as we occupy parts in each of our dreams.
That total revolution in what is, one must have an extraordinary sense of awareness.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.